two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Medicinal marijuana in Utah.
It is a medical marijuana mess just ahead of next week's start to the special legislative session that we'll be covering here at KSL News Radio. Provo woman who takes CBD oil for chronic pain, Dave, says she lives in constant fear of losing custody of her children because a Utah judge doesn't understand the state's new medical marijuana law.
Yeah, he doesn't understand it. She doesn't understand it. Nobody knows what's going on. It's because we're not there yet. We're still making this sausage. Patience. We're going to get there.
Breaking down the story for us now, here's KSL News Radio's John Wojcik.
Emily Roberts of Provo has been dealing with extreme pain stemming from a car accident that happened years ago.
To this day, I suffer from constant back and nerve pain. As a result, the doctors have given me every possible pain medication.
She says the which have helped alleviate pain is by using medical marijuana. She made that discovery while in Colorado, but has been scared to do so back home in fear that her children may be taken away if she tests positive for THC. To this point, a judge in her case has determined that a doctor's recommendation does not serve as a prescription. Next week, lawmakers are set to vote on amendments to Proposition 2 in a special legislative session. John Wojcik, KSL News Radio.
Debbie, I think this is an important conversation to have to find out and really discuss and let people understand what is this legislation going to look like, and really how much freedom do you have to use medical marijuana in your everyday life if you're caring for your children, if you're going to work.
Connor Boyack with the Libertas Institute is right in the center of this story and also the medical marijuana law as it heads back into special legislative session next week. Connor, will this woman lose her children because she uses CBD oil?
Good morning to both of you. Thanks for having me on. The short answer is we sure hope not, and that's why we decided to go public with this story. We've been helping the family behind the scenes and very concerned with what we're seeing. The important thing to note here is we did not pass Prop 2. We did not do this entire year, multi-year long effort only for childless adults, right? We knew that parents would be using this in the home around children, just like opioids, just like other prescription drugs, with care, with caution and everything, sure. But what's happening right now is the law that we passed, the protections that are currently in place for patients that many other patients have benefited from, law enforcement, prosecutors, judges, leaving them alone properly. There are these little instances in which we run into problems. And in this particular case, the judge does not at all understand the law. He's misapplying the law to the detriment of this poor family.
Is this really something that is left to interpretation, or is it pretty well clear with the way the law is passed? Is it flat out explain it to the judges, or how are they falling into this gray area then?
It's a great question. So what I said at yesterday's press conference was this is a total breakdown of the justice system. This family is poor. They can't afford their own attorney. And so the mom has been represented by a public defender who is, you know, likely overworked, underpaid, huge caseload. They don't have the time to dig into this, you know, 100, 200-page new law. So So this attorney has not defended their client, made no defense in court, made no effort to educate the judge and say, hey, judge, here's what the law says. Actually, you're wrong, and here's the legal protections. And so the poor mom has not been adequately represented, and the judge has not been educated, and the judge on his own has not sought to do so. He has made numerous false statements in court about what the law does or does not say. So we've been working with the Office of the Courts. We've been working with DCFS trying to get that education ramped up. It should have been done, frankly, months ago, because what we can't abide, in my opinion, is a justice system that isn't even applying the laws that the legislature has passed. What's the point of changing the law if the rest of the justice system doesn't understand what's in that law or how it should benefit these patients?
Connor Boyack with the Libertas Institute, right in the center of the controversy regarding Utah's new, not yet official, medical marijuana law. Waiting for that to take effect as the legislature heads to special session next week. And I'm going to push back a little bit here on you, Connor, because I've read a few stories about this case, about this mom who feared she may lose her kids because of her CBD oil use. It's now in the courts. I've seen stories from the spokesperson from the courts specifically saying they are trying to figure this out, but we don't really have a law in place right now.
So that's where I would disagree, along with the characterization that the law isn't official. The law was official last December. There are legal protections currently in place. It is taking time for the businesses to get licensed for the product to be grown in Utah, but it is incorrect to say that the law is not official. The governor signed the law last year. There is a law in place right now. Patients can legally use this product. They can obtain it from another state. They have legal protections already. Yes, there's a special session next week, but that's making some modifications only to like the distribution aspect and some other changes. It's some amendments to an existing law. So I too read the court statement. I've been working with the courts. I clearly know what their position is. But fundamentally what it is they've made no effort proactively to educate these judges. Some judges have not been educated on their own. And because we've been pushing this so hard, this week the courts at a conference are doing a breakout session on this very topic so that judges who want to attend that particular breakout session can learn a little bit more. But again, if we have judges that are supposed to be upholding the law, they need to understand the law. And it's been 9-10 months since that law was changed. They should have done that education already.
Connor, is there a way to boil it down in any kind of a simple way, or is it flat out you have to just dive in deep for a few hundred pages and really study it? Is there an idea or a way to say, listen, this is how it works, Judge? As long as you obtain it and you use it, in your downtime, what guidance would you give judges?
So that's a great question. And again, they're going to get a little bit of that education this week. These are sophisticated, you know, attorneys. They can read the law. They understand detail. We've been out doing educational seminars for attorneys and others trying to provide this education and get the word out. But the onus is not on us as an educational nonprofit to be educating the government about what their own law says, right? Those systems are already in place. When the law changes, you know, cities need to change what they're doing. The government agencies need to change what they're doing. The courts need to change. There are already mechanisms in place for liaisons and associations who represent these groups to go back and educate their constituents, go back and educate their members and say, here's what changed. This is an abject failure of government. And when this family is being threatened with having their children taken, no evidence at all of any abuse, no threat to the kids. In fact, the folks, the DCFS, the government folks, have said the kids are doing great. There's no claim that there's any actual problem, and yet this judge continues to hold this over poor Emily and force them to take drug tests in which they have to get naked in front of people to urinate and demonstrate that that they're, you know, providing their own urine to be tested. It's just a degrading, horrible experience that frankly can happen to anyone, and so that's why next week we're trying to get even more tightened up patient protections in place to make sure that this doesn't happen to anyone else like this poor family.
Connor, I've got to ask you a huge favor. Can you stick with us through the next segment? I know you're a super busy guy. You're dealing with all the medical marijuana issues as we head through the legislative session, but there's a very important question I need to ask you, and that is, what about jobs? If somebody's using medical marijuana, what will that look like if they test positive for marijuana when they walk through the door and the company president says, come with me, we need to do a drug test right now?
Yes, I'd be happy to stick with you.
Awesome. Connor, I knew I could talk you into it. Thank you so much. So when we come back, we're going to explore that question. What if your employer gives you a drug test and you've just gotten done taking some medical marijuana before you headed into work?
Deb, I'm proud of you. You put them on the spot, live radio. You can't say no on live radio. Thank you, Connor. I will talk to you in just a few minutes. But first, news, traffic, and weather.
Dave and Dujanovic. Later today, Jeff Kaplan reports on the news.
Big discussion on human trafficking.
And he talks about the news.
Still doesn't meaningfully address the problem.
3 to 7 on KSL News Radio.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Wanna in Utah.
Continuing our discussion about medical marijuana.
Yes.
The Provo woman who was in constant pain is worried about getting her kids taken away from a judge. We had that discussion last segment. And we promised a continuing discussion about what this means for you if you have a company policy that says, you know, you can't test positive for drugs.
Yeah, I'm so happy that Connor Boyack is joining us. Stuck around for another segment. Connor, thanks for sticking around. Give me a little bit of an idea. If I'm a user of medical marijuana, what are my rights? Did we lose Connor? Hang on a sec.
We're trying to figure
out.
Sorry,
I had you on mute.
Oh, that's right.
Well,
you had a great answer, though, I'm sure.
I do that to him all the time, Connor. And let me remind our listeners, Connor Boyack is with Libertas Institute. He's right in the center of the medical marijuana controversy. We're talking about this not only because of the situation in Provo with the mom who's worried about losing her kids over it, but also, you know, we're looking at a special session next week, Connor, and, you know, people who are going to be using this worried about their jobs.
This is a really important question, and I'm grateful for the opportunity to answer it. To be very clear, the current medical cannabis law in Utah does not protect an individual against a company policy that says that they can't use marijuana. We were very intentional about this so as not to impose any type of mandate on private employers to have their own policies. However, if you are a government employee, it's different. If you are a government employee, the government is required to treat medical cannabis the same way they treat prescription drugs. Of course, the government does not tell its employees, hey, you can't use opioids, benzodiazepines, you know, mood stabilizers or whatever. They have no such policies. Really, the policies are about making sure you can do the work safely, competently, et cetera. We don't want you impaired at work from any drug. It's now going to be that same way for government employees, that medical cannabis is required to be treated the same. But the law does not override, does not undermine any private company's policies in cases where a company may wish to have a policy of that nature.
Would somebody be able to challenge that if the private company does have that policy where you can't use marijuana, even medically? Would that be able to be challenged in court?
So there would be a legal basis to do so. Yes, technically they could file a challenge. The question is whether they would be successful. Because the law doesn't outright state that companies are required to allow it and so forth, they would be unlikely to succeed in that case. However, you know, there may be some creative legal arguments that someone might be able to use to persuade a judge to support them. But again, we were intentional in passing the law in a free market state, a right to work state. We did not want the government coming down, putting its thumb down and saying, hey, companies, we're forcing you to do this. Hopefully with education, these companies are going to recognize that it's not, you know, a problem if people are using medical cannabis pursuant to the law, and they're going to change those policies on their own. But we did not want the government to force them into that change.
Connor Boyack is with the Libertas Institute. We're talking about the medical marijuana issue here in Utah, how it'll affect people, workers, and their jobs. Connor, as you know, we have a text line here. We call it the Utah Community Credit Union text line. I always like to give them a plug because they sponsor that text line for us. So you can text us with your questions if it's safe to do so. Connor, I want to ask you, pass along one of the texts from one of our listeners. She says, I work for a credit union and one of my coworkers tested positive for marijuana. She was the only it was the only thing that gave her relief from chronic back pain. She was told that even after the law went into effect in Utah, she could not use it because we are a federal credit union. So follow federal law. What do you make of that?
That is a tricky issue, and that's precisely why this is such a delicate topic. Because even in having the state legalize this for purposes of state law enforcement, and so forth, it remains federally illegal. And many companies receive federal grants. The federal government is their client. They use federal policies as their own policies. And so in situations like that, you're likely going to see this very thing play out, where out of a concern for the bottom line, out of a concern for the company's compliance with the federal government, they're not going to go around saying, sure, go violate federal law for marijuana. This is why what we need is comprehensive federal reform to move us out of the 1950s, you know, into 2019, where more than two-thirds of states have already legalized this. It's time to fix it at the federal level so that these precise problems that this person who texted about are reporting are resolved, because the state can only do so much.
Well, and had we addressed this at a federal level, then all these amendments in the special session wouldn't have been needed, because the counties would have been fine to distribute the medical cannabis.
Sure. Yep.
Connor Boyack, before we let you go, let me ask you a couple of other questions. What about, for example, police officers? What about truck drivers? I'm seeing a text from a truck driver who says, I would for sure be fired from my job.
Absolutely. You know, like any driving under the influence type of situation, you shouldn't be operating a vehicle, whether, you know, using alcohol, opioids, cannabis, anything of the like. So the law does not shield anyone in those situations. Everyone needs to be using this safely. And if you're in a job that you're operating heavy machinery, right, you're a truck driver and so forth, then you are going to have to follow those guidelines and use this properly. Police officers, again, they're a government employee. So what I said earlier still applies. They are required to follow the law. And in so doing, those police officers, firefighters, bureaucrats, every government employee is allowed to use medical cannabis as a legal patient. They have to do so properly, obviously, and the government can set policies to make sure that they're doing so safely, but the government cannot tell its employees, in this case a police officer, that they can't use it at all. It was really interesting during Prop 2. Many in law enforcement were opposing what Prop 2 was, yet we would hear from tons of police officers with PTSD, with back pain, with all sorts of issues, who wanted to use it. And so now they are free to do so. They're legally allowed to.
Connor Boyack, thank you so much for sticking around and answering those questions. Debbie.
Fascinating conversation, Dave.
I'm so glad we had the conversation,
yes,
because boiling it down so that we understand it, it's one thing for the judge and attorneys to understand the minutiae, every small little detail. But generally speaking, the people that are going to be using medical cannabis are not going to have that kind of understanding of the law. They need to know basically, when can I use it? When is it safe? And of course, if you're worried about your employer, have the conversation. They'll break it down for you, and you can work through it together. They may not have a good understanding either, Debbie. This is new. If we have judges and lawyers that don't understand it well, the chances that your HR director has a firm understanding of it, I don't know. That may not be the case. So educate, and find out for yourself.
Been looking forward to this conversation all morning. He was on the sex offender registry until yesterday, spent 15 years locked up at the Utah State Prison. Yet it seems to me a simple piece of evidence just proved an innocent man wasn't at the crime scene after all. Next, we're going to go with a live interview where I want to ask this question. What in the world went so wrong inside Utah's criminal justice system in this case?
Dave and Dujanovic. Get all news all morning. Then go in-depth about the news with Dave and Debbie.
I put your Social Security number on a billboard.
It would change nothing.
News at 5. Talk of 9 on KSL News Radio.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.